Birth, the Grand Division, Chapter 20. Working on an oil rig 40 miles out to sea requires staying on site for 3 weeks at a time. Since he was a newbie, he always served the night shift. Sleeping during the day is hard enough, but the constant drone of diesel generators makes it even harder. Still, the body adapts to the gentle swaying of the floating rig, the low-pitched rumble of the Kelly turning and holding 3 miles of steel from collapsing into the hole, and the sound of men walking down the metal-floored hallways past the semi-private rooms. The other thing that challenged the mind and body was getting used to sleeping back on land, where the environment is quiet and stable. The biorhythm gets pretty beat up after just a few months of switching back and forth. Orphan had been on shore for more than 3 weeks now, so deep sleep came easily no matter where he was. Sleeping in the slightly reclined guest chair in Shelley's private room was no different. It was quiet, except for the nearly imperceptible beeping of the monitors hooked to her sleeping body. She had not made a single sound since he arrived earlier that evening. It was still difficult to dream for any length of time, at least without flashbacks of the rig fire and explosion and the death of Judge right in front of him. He almost forgot why he was sleeping in Shelley's room. Almost. "Hey, kid," he felt someone shaking his shoulder. He jerked slightly and opened his eyes to see a police officer leaning down into his face. "Hey, kid, visiting hours are over," said the officer. "What time is it?" asked Orphan. "It's almost 2:30. You have to go," he said. Orphan rubbed his eyes and slowly came to his senses. "It's okay. I plan to stay the night here. I'm on the roster," he said. "I don't care if you are. I'm saying it's time for you to leave," said the officer, standing back from him a pace. "What's your name? You have some ID?" "My name? Why would you want to know that?" asked Orphan, keeping the blanket up around his neck as he sat reclined in the chair. "Don't get smart with me, son," said the officer with a tone that was meant to challenge him. The room door opened, and a second officer came into the room and placed his back to the door as he closed it behind him. "We have a problem?" he asked. Both men were large and had closely cut hair. Orphan noticed they were armed with automatics and tasers. He didn't want trouble, but he also was told by his father not to leave Shelley alone. "Look, I'm a close friend of the family, and I've been asked to stay here with her until she wakes up. What's wrong with that?" asked Orphan in a very quiet tone, not wanting to escalate the situation. "What's wrong with that is that I asked you nicely to leave. Now, if you don't leave the premises, we're going to arrest you. Am I clear?" said the first officer. "Let's get the nurse. She knows I'm here, and she's okay with it," said Orphan. "I'm not okay with it. Now get your shit and get the hell out of here. I'm not saying it again," he said. Orphan had his right hand on his cell phone. In case a text came through, or it rang while it was set to vibrate. He thumbed the phone on and dialed the last number received without looking at it. He rolled out of the seat smoothly and in a flash placed the chair between him and the officer. "I don't want any trouble," said Orphan. "Well, sonny boy, if you don't put those feet in those boots and start walking, you found all the trouble you're ever going to want." And the threat was crisp in his voice. "You going to call for backup?" Orphan asked smartly. "Not for your scrawny smart ass," he said, moving toward him. "I think you better call for backup," said Orphan, dropping the blanket from around him. His 180-pound frame turned to the side with his hands down low and his weight balanced on the balls of his stocking feet. He slid the active cell phone right into his front jeans pocket and watched the black-uniformed officer slide the chair out of the way. The other cop stood across the door with his arms folded and his feet far apart, chewing gum. "Put your arms behind your back," he said, reaching for Orphan's arm. Orphan flashed his left hand forward to sweep the officer's right hand away and stepped forward, placing his right foot against the outside of the officer's right boot. He nudged his hip into the officer's right leg, using his own heavy movement against him, and elbowed him in the right side of the face, hard. It popped loudly as his jaw slapped his teeth together. The man stumbled and stepped back with his left foot to regain his balance. Orphan did not hesitate, for he knew the next move would be to draw his weapon. It was then that he noticed something missing. There was no badge. There was no radio. Any real officer would have a badge and a radio. He spun the man around and pushed him forward with his left hand in the middle of his back while holding the man's left foot behind his own right ankle. The large man was forced into a tripping fall and hit the tile floor hard with his face as Orphan held his right arm back to prevent him from breaking his own fall. He stepped forward onto the man's back and stared straight at the other officer, also with no badge. He was too slow in reaching for his weapon as Orphan flashed the small... He was too slow in reaching for his weapon as Orphan flashed the small ceramic blade from his vest and leaped off the back of his fallen partner and into his face, placing the blade a fraction of an inch away from his left eye and holding his right hand up and away from his gun. "Do not touch your gun," he said. Orphan slowly released the man's hand and drew the gun from the holster and tossed it under Shelley's bed. The man on the floor groaned and tried to bring his arms under his body to push onto his feet. "Turn around," he said with his steel voice. His heart was racing as he withdrew the blade slightly so the man could turn around. He pushed the man's face into the corner between the wall and the hardwood door, reached down to the belt where the handcuffs should have been. "You guys are out of uniform," he said, drawing his right hand back with his knuckles now rolled around the handle of the blade held sideways now. He punched the man in the base of the neck as hard as he could, and he fell like someone had cut his legs off. The other man was nearly to his knees when Orphan skipped over the floor and drove his heel into the side of his bloodied face, just behind his left ear. His forehead made a sickening thud as it hit the floor in the puddle of blood. He did not move again. The door began to push into the room, but it struck the black combat boots of the man face down on the corner. He stepped back and drew the gun from the other man's holster and changed hands with the knife. The door pushed harder, and he raised the gun. "Hey, are you all right?" said the nurse who had spoken to him earlier. He took his finger off the trigger and lowered the gun. "Call 911," said Orphan. "The police? I think these guys..." "The police. I think these guys came to kill Shelley." "Oh my God, I thought they were cops," she said, stressing the last two words. "Well, they're not, and they may need to stay the night," he said, ready to kick the first one who moved. He took out his cell phone to call his father and noticed it was still connected to Loretta Wesson. He put it to his ear. "Hello?" "Oh, Jesus Christ, Orphan, what's going on?" said Loretta, as though she had been yelling at the phone for the last 5 minutes. "Two guys, posing as cops, tried to pay Shelley a visit," he said, trying to calm down with the blood pounding in his ears. "Mike and Bet are on their way. Don't move. Don't leave her," she said on the verge of tears. "Don't worry, I'm not leaving. Shelley's okay. She slept through the whole thing," he said. "The whole thing? What whole thing?" she said. "I had to put these two guys to sleep," he said. "What the hell? You're just a boy. Are you okay?" "I'm fine. These two guys, on the other hand, are probably in the right place," he said sarcastically. "But you're just a boy," she said, crying now. "A very dangerous boy," he said flatly. His father taught him to show no mercy when it came to defending his life or the life of a loved one. He figured if he had left the room that Shelley would be dead. No mercy. "I gotta go. The cops are on their way. I'll wait for Agent Smith and Bet." The door pushed open again, and The door pushed open again, and the nurse and a young Asian doctor came into the room. They pushed the door past the man on the floor in the corner and looked around. He dropped to his knees and pulled the man's shirt down from his ears. He put his stethoscope into his ears and placed the head of it against the man's neck for a few seconds. He crawled over the man lying on the floor face down and with a growing puddle of blood coming from his face. He quickly checked him the same way. "Call some orderlies and get a gurney," he barked for the nurse. "One?" she asked almost in a panic as she headed for the door. "And call the coroner," he said as he stood to run out the door. "Oh," came a quiet moan from the bed. "Shelley? Shelley? Hey, I'm here," said Orphan as he stepped quickly to the side of her bed. He placed the gun on the nightstand and grabbed her hand and held it in his. His hands were shaking from the stress of the fight. He was trying to block the fact that one of the men was dead out of his mind and to focus on Shelley. She blinked hard like she was trying to push the fog out of her head. Her head rolled slightly to the left where Orphan was holding her hand tightly. "What the hell?" she said through the dryness of her throat. Orphan grabbed the insulated cup. Orphan grabbed the insulated cup from her nightstand, bent the straw over, and placed it gently to her swollen lips. She felt it and closed her lips around the straw to draw a few swallows. She winced as the cold water went down her throat and coughed as though some of it went down her windpipe. "Hey, you're gonna make it. Hey, you're gonna make it," he said. "My car," she said. "Totaled," said Orphan. "Damn, it still smelled new," she said, stretching her legs. "Ouch." "I don't think they're broken, but your arm is," he said. The door opened again, and the young doctor came back in to Shelley's side across from Orphan. "Shelley, I'm Dr. Wynn. The neurologist and orthopedic PA are on their way. Stay awake if you can. You've got a concussion. The regular staff will be here in about an hour, and we'll take care of you, okay?" he said, flashing his pen light in one eye and then the other. "Orphan, is that you?" she asked, with her eyes closed again. "Yeah, it's me. Look at me. Open your eyes, Shelley," he said, really not knowing what to do. "What?" she groaned, annoyed at him. "Shelley, you need to stay awake as long as you can. Don't go back to sleep," he said, shaking her hand gently. "Just keep looking at me." "I want some French fries," she said, opening her eyes slightly. "A shake to go with those fries?" he asked, trying to keep her attention. "Chocolate," she said. The door pushed open hard as the gurney bumped into it. It withdrew, and a young Hispanic orderly came into the room. "What the hell?" he said. "That guy is going with you," he said, pointing to the man lying in a growing pool of blood. "That guy probably shouldn't be moved until the coroner gets here." "Hey, get a stretcher from the hall," he said to the other orderly outside the room. Within a minute, the two orderlies were lifting the man face down in the middle of the floor onto the stretcher. They lifted together and carried the man into the hall and placed the stretcher on the gurney. Orphan could hear the gurney wheels rolling away down the hall as they ran toward the emergency room. "What happened?" asked Shelley. "You had an accident, I guess," said Orphan. "Bullshit. That car went batshit crazy. It was like possessed," said Shelley. "I don't know anything about that, but my dad said you were in danger. I came to watch over you," he said. "Aw, thank you, baby. That is sweet," she said, smiling through her swollen lips. "No worries. You are an important part of the plan," he says. "We have to keep you safe," said Orphan. "I was on the way to see your father," she began. "We have to get more aggressive with this story. The audience is tearing the social media up on this stuff. No one else will cover it. They don't get it or something. I don't know. What I do know is that our audience has tripled because my program is the only source for information. Everybody sees something happening, but they can't figure it out. We have to tell them," said Shelley. "I know what I saw. The waves, the BP rig being torn apart, and the cover-up by the company. It's all corrupt," said Orphan with fear in his voice. The door opened again with Dr. Wynn and the coroner coming through. "What actually happened here?" asked the coroner. "They tried to kill Shelley. I had to stop them," said Orphan. "You stopped these two men by yourself?" asked the coroner. He was a balding, middle-aged man with a light blue windbreaker with the letters coroner on the back. He was overweight, which was slightly out of place for Southern California. and had a voice that was too loud for his liking. My father put her in my charge, said Orphan. A man is dead, son. I need some information once I determine the cause of death. You're not leaving this building until I return to speak with you with the police. Am I clear? He said. I'll be here, said Orphan quietly. Two more orderlies showed up and entered the room. The coroner took a bunch of pictures. Turn this guy over, he said to the orderlies. He took a few more pictures. He used his feet to move the man's feet together and picked up each of his arms and placed them on his chest. Are these guys cops or what? No, sir, said Orphan. They're dressed like cops, but they don't have badges, radios, or cuffs. They're not cops. Cops don't have tattoos like that, he said, pointing to the skull on the man's arm where his sleeve had pulled back. Huh. That is correct. See if this guy has a wallet or some ID on him. The two orderlies dug in the man's pocket and looked up at the coroner, shaking their heads. No badge and no ID. You say they were here to kill her? Yes, sir. That is what I believe, said Orphan. Did they say anything to you? Yes, they did, said Orphan without opening his mouth again. Yeah. Well, I can see you're a smart boy and pretty good with your hands, it seems. You don't need to tell me anything. You better wait till the police get here. Like I said, don't leave until I say you can go, okay? Said the coroner. Yes, sir, said Orphan. The two orderlies lifted the man off the floor and placed him on the gurney that had been lowered close to the floor. They raised the gurney and rolled it down the hall with the coroner walking beside it, holding a small recording device to his mouth. Orphan, you're going to need an attorney, said Shelley. Not to worry. My dad'll handle everything, said Orphan. The door opened again, and this time it was Bet and Agent Smith. Hey, Orphan, how are you? Asked Smith. I'm okay, said Orphan, now beginning to feel the weight of what had just transpired. Hey, come here, said Bet as she wrapped her arms around his shoulders. He returned the embrace, and she felt a little shiver from him as the stress began to release. She let her arms go to her sides, and within a second or two, Orphan let go and stood back up straight. He had a place to go inside that his father had taught him, that gave him strength to bear up under conflicts such as this. Hey, Shelley, said Smith. Welcome back to the land of the living. Funny, I don't feel all that happy about it. Hurts, she said, stretching her legs again. What happened? Well, best we can tell after examining the BCM in your car, it was hacked remotely, said Smith, nodding his head slightly. What does that mean? They can do that? Asked Shelley. It means someone tried to kill you by taking over the controls of your car remotely. We think it was from the air above you. Those bastards tried to make it look like you just lost control of your car at high speed, said Bet, slapping her right fist into her left palm. So these two guys came in to finish the job, said Orphan. Yeah, tell me what happened. Give me all the detail you can remember, said Smith. Well, the first guy, dressed as a policeman, turns out he wasn't even a cop, woke me up and said I had to leave. I basically said I wasn't leaving. Then a second guy came in, dressed the same way, and he wasn't a cop either. Big guys, said Orphan, looking off to a corner of the room. Then what happened? Asked Smith. Well, the first guy tried to, like, arrest me. He went to grab for me. So I did a taekwondo move I practiced 1,000 times, and I tried to put him to sleep. He was much tougher than I thought, so I had to slam him on the floor face first. Then the second guy looked like he was going to shoot me, so I pulled my blade and went for his eye. Well, just like this close to his eye, he said, holding his thumb very close to his finger. I disarmed him, and then I noticed that they didn't have badges or radios or handcuffs, which scared the hell out of me. So I turned him around to put him to sleep. I must have hit him too hard, because he died, said Orphan on the verge of tears. Hey, I know what you mean. It will pass. It'll be okay, my man, said Smith. You do? Asked Bet, looking at Smith as she put her arms back around Orphan's shoulders to hold him. Smith smiled at her and rubbed her shoulder with his good hand. "Mercs," he said with a flat expression. "Yeah, well, my dad told me to protect Shelley. Said I was the only one he could trust." "I didn't want to let him down," said Orphan. "You didn't let anyone down, Orphan," said Shelley. "I owe you my life. If I... if you were 5 years older, I would kiss you," she said, smiling in pain. "Okay, maybe two." Orphan smiled and pulled on his leather vest to shake off the feeling that was making him feel sad. "I guess I should call my dad. It's getting close to 4 a.m. "No problem. Take your time. We'll stay here with you," said Smith. Orphan took out his phone again and dialed his father's number and let it ring twice. He then pressed the button to end the call and waited for it to ring. It was an emergency protocol he had learned from his father. "Outgoing calls can be tapped easily, so let me call you back on my encrypted line," he always said. Within a minute, his phone vibrated. "Orphan," he answered. "Tell me what happened," said Abdullah. "You were right, as usual. Two men dressed as cops came to kill Shelley," he said. "Where are they now?" asked Abdullah. "I tried to put them both asleep," said Orphan on the verge of tears. The weight of having killed a man was pulling him into a deep sadness. "Are they both alive?" asked Abdullah, sensing something terrible had happened. "One is. They took him away unconscious. He has a concussion and was bleeding from his forehead. Listen to me. These men have no souls. My heart is painful that you experienced this so young, but you saved Shelley's life," said Abdullah. "So how did it happen?" "I hit him on the neck just over his shoulders. But I had the knife handle in my fist, Dad." He could barely speak now. "I hit him hard, and he stopped breathing. He's dead," said Orphan with his voice shuddering. "He was already dead," his father said in Farsi. "Now he has his reward in hell." "Dad, it hurts," said Orphan, unable to put the sound on the H in the word. "Who else is there with you?" he asked. "Bet and Agent Smith are here," he said. "Shelley's awake." "That is good," he said. "I am sending an attorney to meet you there. His name is Frank Rosen. Speak to no one but him, and your friends, of course. Do you still have the knife?" "Yes." "Give it to Smith. He will know what to do. Eat something. You'll feel better. And son?" he finally asked in Farsi. "Yes, my father," he answered in kind. "I love you," he said in the royal dialect. It was the first time in his life, really, he felt the power of his father's love for him. His entire life, he had been a teacher, a trainer, and a coach to him. He had put him through hell and made him feel the pain of failure while cautioning him never to revel in success. Never until this moment did he realize it was all because he truly loved him more than life itself. "I love you too, Dad," he said in English. The phone clicked off from his father's side, but he could feel him weeping, for this lesson was the hardest of all. He walked back to the side of Shelley's bed slowly and put the phone in his pocket. "Are you good?" asked Smith with the tone of the Secret Service agent now. "Yes, sir," said Orphan, wiping his eyes. "I'm good." "He told you to speak to no one, right?" he asked. "Oh, come on, Mike. He's just a boy," said Bet. "Not anymore." "You have a lawyer?" asked Smith. "Yes, sir. My dad is sending one. Frank Rosen," said Orphan. "Good. Let me handle the police when they get here," said Smith. "We'll make sure you get home," said Bet. She turned to Smith and motioned for him to go outside to speak with her. He patted Shelley's hand, and they turned to leave the room. "We'll be right back. We're going to get some coffee. Would you like some?" she asked as they stopped at the door. "Actually, we're both kind of hungry," said Orphan, smiling now and holding Shelley's hand. "She wants French fries and a chocolate shake." Shelley squeezed his hand and smiled at him, her eyes moistening as she looked back at him. "We'll be right back," said Bet. The two of them walked out into the hall, and Bet stopped him as soon as the door closed behind him. "Another shit show, Smith," she said, pointing at his chest. "Those shadow bastards have gone too far this time." But she couldn't go any further. Smith grabbed her arm firmly in his right hand, stopping her. His jaw was set and the expression was gone from his face. She knew he loved her, and she could tell he was about to do some agent business that now she was part of for the rest of their lives. "I need your phone," he said. "Take the car and go get some food for those two. Hospital food sucks," he said, now caressing her arm down to her hand. She dug for her phone and looked him in the eyes, trying to reach his heart, and kissed his lips. He kissed her back. "I'll be back in a flash. Go get 'em," she said close to his ear with her lips kissing him again, and walked with her long legs swiftly down the hall. He dialed the number and listened. "Smith," he said into the phone as it answered. "Jones," came the response, too slow to say at first. They sent two assassins to Shelley's room, Orphan engaged, putting one in the emergency room and accidentally terminating the other. "They were dressed as cops," he said in his computer-like tone. "Damn, tough kid. Is he hurt?" asked Jones. "Not physically. He's just 20 years old," said Smith. "They're really going to be pissed now," said Jones. "My thoughts exactly. We have to move Shelley. I need assets. I got it," said Jones, interrupting him. "One arm is not good enough. We have resources near Westwood, the old veterans' mansion on Wilshire. They're an hour away, tops, but we can move her there. It's secure," said Jones. "You have to get Orphan out of there. Bayezid is sending a lawyer. We're not going downtown," said Smith. "You packing?" asked Jones. "Just a knife," said Smith, palming the small ceramic blade. "Hang tough, partner. I got you covered," said Jones. "Tell Hadid what's up, and no one else in D.C., said Smith. "Roger that," said Jones. Smith pressed the screen, ending the call, and walked back to the room, trying to put a smile on his face. "Food is on the way," said Smith to Orphan and Shelley. "How are you feeling?" "We'll be okay," said Shelley, quick to speak. "Just in case, we have these," said Orphan, pointing to the automatic on the nightstand and reaching under the bed with his stocking foot and dragging the other gun into view. "Outstanding," said Smith, as he ejected the clip, slid back the slide, and checked the chamber. "Chamber's empty." He slammed the clip home and pulled the slide back to chamber around and placed the gun behind his back inside his jeans. He untucked his shirt covering the gun and bent over to pick up the other gun. He did the same thing with that gun. "You're lucky, kid. This one was locked and loaded." He slid it under the blanket of Shelley's bed. The door opened and the nurse came in. "I have someone coming to clean the room. Can we move you down to the next room?" she asked. "A detective is coming up." "I am Secret Service Agent Smith, and I have control of this scene right now," said Smith, opening his badge and ID. "Show me the room and secure this floor," he said in a professional tone. "Yes, sir. This way," she said, opening the door. They walked into the hall, and they walked into the nurse's station a few doors down. "Code blue," she said to the station nurse. The nurse snapped into motion and picked up the phone, dialed a few numbers, and spoke into the phone. "This is a code blue, fifth floor, code blue, fifth floor," and she hung up the phone. "Ma'am, who is the clearance officer?" she asked. "Agent Smith here is the clearance officer," she said. "Yes, ma'am," and she walked to the elevator door to punch in the code, blocking access to the floor. "This way, Agent Smith," she said, walking through the nurse's station to the other hallway. "It's room 510. They walked into the room, and Smith went to the window and looked out. "No good. I need one with no parking lot below," said Smith. "That would be the other side. It has a view of the admin building," she said as they walked briskly across the hall. "This one'll do. No listing change. Keep her listed in the original room. Let's go," he said, walking out the door and back to Shelley's room. They entered Shelley's room and the nurse unhooked Shelley's sensors and her IV. Orphan and Smith rolled the bed out of the room and down to the room he had checked out. "How are you feeling, girl?" asked Smith. "A little dizzy, but I think I'll be okay," she said. Orphan poured some water from her pitcher into the insulated container and replaced the lid. He held it down for her to take another few swallows. "Do you think you can stand?" asked Smith. Maybe, she said. I'll carry her if that'll help, said Orphan. She can't weigh more than a braided cable. Can we get her some pants to wear, asked Smith, and the nurse disappeared out the door. I have to pee. Would you boys mind if I... she said modestly. Are you sure you can walk? Asked Orphan, looking at the bathroom door just a few steps away from the bed. Well, I guess we need to find that out. I think I can make it that far, she responded with a swollen smile. I'll help her, said Orphan, reaching for her unbroken arm and helping her sit up. Don't look at my ass, she said to Orphan. Oh, I won't, he said, pulling her hospital gown together in the back. Smith stepped out of the door and waited with his back against the wall. He calmed his mind and took a deep breath. The nurse walked toward him from the station just a few doors down with a pair of blue scrubs. Smith moved away from the door slightly, allowing her to enter the room and return. My fiancée will return downstairs in just a second or two. Make sure she gets up here, alone in the elevator, he said. I have agents coming from Westwood as well. And where is that detective? He asked. He's still on the first floor. The floor is locked out, she said. There's an attorney coming too, Frank Rosen. Got that? He asked. Yes, sir, she said. Those men, and only those men, will be allowed to ride up together in the elevator. Got that? He asked, like he was giving orders to a field sergeant. Yes, sir, she said. Former military? He asked. Yes, sir. One tour in Afghanistan, she said. Yes, sir. One tour in Afghanistan, she said. We have a situation here. The enemy may try again with collateral damage. We are extracting our patients under my command, he said. Yes, sir, she said. Go to work. When you get that done, come back and report, he said. Yes, sir, she said as she turned to walk away briskly. They learned early on that there was no war zone anymore. It was all war, all the time. He lost troops while training Afghani soldiers when the very trainees they had worked with, ate with, maneuvered with, and trusted with weapons turned those very same weapons against his people and shot them. He developed a skill at being able to spot what they call the ghost in the machine. The slightest moment of trust with the wrong person, no matter how earnest and true they appeared, would get you dead. This nurse had seen the same thing. She had probably treated soldiers injured by IEDs or hand-to-hand attacks by these jihadis who would suddenly awaken and strike without warning. They had not a care in the world about dying unless it was by accident or at the hands of a woman. Female soldiers were among the most feared fighters in the Middle East because they believed targets of a woman went straight to hell. He smiled at the thought. It was the only beautiful thing about that war. Shelley's room door opened and Orphan motioned for him to come inside. Shelley was sitting in the easy chair in the blue scrubs, holding her injured arm in her good one. How are the legs? He asked. Ugly and sore, but they'll do in a pinch, she said. Bet should be back in a second. The floor is locked out, but I'll get her up here. Your attorney and my guys will be here soon as well, and there's a detective downstairs. Don't worry about him. You won't be talking anyway, he said. There was a knock at the door, and it began to open. Smith drew the rear of his shirt up and placed his hand on the gun. Mike? Bet entered the room with bags of food from McDonald's. Food! Awesome! Said Shelley. You moved, and the elevator's locked out. The nurse came down and got me. There's a detective, and he almost forced his way into the elevator with me, but your nurse is the shit. I like her, said Bet as she put the food down on the rolling bed table. Yeah. We're a little more organized, said Smith, dropping his shirt back over the gun. There was another knock at the door, and the nurse poked her head in. Your team is here, and the lawyer, she said. Hold on for a second, said Smith, taking out Bet's cell phone. He pressed the screen. Smith, do you have an action code for these guys? Hold on, he said, grabbing the pen off the table and scooting the pad over to write it. Got it. I'll be here, he said, pressing the screen to end the call. He tore off the piece of paper and handed it to the nurse. "Memorize this number. Ask the agents for their action code. It should match this exactly. If it doesn't, nobody comes up that elevator. Nobody. Got it?" "Yes, sir," she said as she placed the piece of paper back on the table and smiled. The door closed softly as she left. "What do you want us to do?" asked Orphan as he finished his Big Mac and took a sip of Coke. "Take Shelley in the bathroom and close the door. Take the gun. I will knock twice if it's all clear," said Smith. He moved to the window, cleared his mind, and Bet slid her hand over his shoulder and pressed her body next to his. "We're going to Westwood. Secure facility," he said. "I go where you go," she said, and they waited together. There was a soft knock at the door, and the nurse opened the door. "Your team is here," she said. "Send the agents in, and you can go back to your station," she said. She opened the door and left. The door opened again, and the two men in dark suits entered. "I'm Agent Ramirez, and this is Agent Hansen," said the first agent. "This is the situation. We are extracting this patient to Westwood Veterans Mansion. Do you know where that is?" "Yes, sir," said Ramirez. "One of you find out where the wounded subject was taken and interrogate him. Return and report," said Smith. Hansen turned and left the room. "Bring in the detective and the lawyer," said Smith. Ramirez opened the door and leaned out. The door opened wider, and the two men came in. One was wearing a suit, and the other one was wearing a brown leather jacket. Ramirez stood with his back against the wall and let the other two men enter with their backs to him. It was the preferred position for agents, one in front and one behind. It kept the people in between in complete check and cautious. "I'm Detective Hopkins, Los Robles PD. I believe there's been a homicide. I need to speak to the suspect," he said. "That's fine, officer, but I am his attorney, and he is not a suspect in any crime at this time. My client will not be making any statements," said Frank Rosen. "Hello, Agent Smith. I heard a lot about you," he said, shaking Smith's hand. "With respect, I need some answers, counselor," said Hopkins. "My understanding is that two armed men assaulted and battered my client, and any injuries or expirations were purely in self-defense," said Frank. "That's pretty brutal self-defense, don't you think, counselor?" said Hopkins. "My client was unarmed and was justified under the law to use deadly force," said Frank. "Two armed men and your client used deadly force. I think I'd like to meet him, please," said Hopkins. "For the record, detective, my client will be leaving with me today, if that's understood," said Frank. "Were there any witnesses?" asked Hopkins. "That I do not know," said Frank. "You see, I need to ask your client a couple of questions," said Hopkins. There was a moment of silence in the room that grew in intensity. "May I speak with my client?" asked Frank. Smith motioned for the bathroom door. Frank walked over to the door and reached for it. Smith stopped his hand from touching the door and gently knocked twice. He then opened the door and let Frank Rosen into the bathroom and closed the door behind him. The conversation was muted behind the door and lasted for 5 minutes. The door opened, and Frank and Orphan emerged. They stood together beside Smith and closed the bathroom door behind them. "You can ask my client some questions," said Frank. "What's your name, son?" asked Hopkins. "Orphan Bayazed." "How old are you?" "I'll be 21 in about 3 months." "How did you kill this man?" asked Hopkins. "You don't have to answer that question," said Frank. "We don't know to whom you are referring." "Do you even have a body?" asked Frank. "It's a John Doe for now," said Hopkins. "No, we don't do John Doe's, detective," said Frank. "The coroner reported the death of a male weighing 225 pounds by a dislocated C6 vertebrae causing paralysis and suffocation. Cause of the dislocation was a targeted blow to the rear of the neck with a blunt object," said the detective. "There was no weapon?" asked Frank. "None was recovered," said Hopkins. "What about the witnesses?" "There were no conscious witnesses in the room," said Frank. "Conscious? Everyone except your client and the dead man was unconscious? So the death was accidental, is that what you're saying? Asked Hopkins. Looks like it to me, detective. No witnesses, no weapon, no identification on the deceased. We don't even know if he was a citizen afforded the right to use the legal system in the United States of America. He may have slipped and fallen down and broken his own neck, said Frank. There was another stretch of time. Hopkins used this tactic to offer the guilty a chance to run their mouth, to fill in the space with sound. Don't leave town, Mr. Bayazet. I will be in touch, said Hopkins, and he turned to leave the room. Ramirez, will you see the detective to the elevator? Asked Smith. Yes, sir, said Ramirez. As the elevator door opened, Agent Hansen greeted the detective and Ramirez with a nod and walked past them into the room. Ramirez took the detective to the ground floor without conversation. What's your report? Asked Smith. There was no male admitted to the emergency room fitting the description, said Hansen. What do you mean? What descriptions were there? Asked Smith. There was an 8-year-old boy with a broken finger and a 70-year-old man with shortness of breath, said Hansen. House cleaning, said Smith with his agent's tone. When Ramirez returns, we are leaving. What vehicle do you have? Asked Smith. Standard issue Taurus, said Hansen. That won't do. She can't ride in the cramped back seat of a Taurus, said Bet. We could take the Raptor, said Orphan. It's got 4 doors, and the back seat is huge. Plus, the vehicle is bulletproof. Smith paused for a second and looked at Orphan. Bulletproof? He asked. Yeah, my dad made some modifications. It's badass, he said. Ramirez, get the nurse down here, said Smith. The door opened and Ramirez returned in less than a minute with the nurse. I need a wheelchair. We're moving her now to the ground floor, said Smith. Yes, sir, said the nurse. Come with me. She changed the tone of her voice and tapped Ramirez on the shoulder. The two of them returned with a wheelchair. Can you sit okay? She asked Kelly. Orphan helped her stand up and put his arms under her legs and shoulder and picked her up gently and helped her into the wheelchair. Smith grabbed a blanket and the gun from the bed and covered Shelley up to the neck. Got a mask? He asked. Yeah, no problem, said the nurse, opening the small drawer in the room and retrieving a mask. She lifted Shelley's head and placed the mask over her mouth and nose. Let's go, said Smith. I'll bring the Raptor around to the ER exit, said Orphan. It's black on black. The two agents took the lead with Bet and Smith pushing the wheelchair as they headed for the elevator. The nurse punched in the code and stepped inside. Ever use one of these? Asked Smith, reaching for the gun under the blanket. Yes, sir, said the nurse. You know where it is if you need it, he said, covering it back up near Shelley's shoulder. The elevator dropped slowly, and the 7 of them waited in tense silence. Just as the elevator speaker beeped for the upcoming second floor, there was a loud rumble, and the elevator lights went red. It dropped for a split second and stopped. A small amount of dust fell from the small spaces between the ceiling tiles of the elevator. Earthquake? Asked the nurse. I don't think so, said Smith. Get that door open, guys. The two agents put their fingers into the crack of the elevator door and forced it open to reveal a couple of feet of the upper part of the second floor at the bottom of the elevator. They each got on their knees and reached down to the door mechanism and forced the door open, revealing a dark floor space illuminated by emergency battery-powered lights.
Oh, God, damn, that hurts, said Shelley. I'm sorry, said Bet. I hit your arm.
Hansen held her up as Bet and the nurse dropped her to the floor. I'll get her to the wheelchair, said the nurse. Be right back. Smith got on his belly and lowered himself to the floor with Bet wrapping her arms around his waist. He handed the other gun to her, and they looked down the hall through the hazy darkness. Within a minute, the nurse came running behind a wheelchair. They put Shelley into it and took off for the stairs. The hallway smelled like smoke, and there were people shouting orders, and a few were screaming for help.
What the hell happened? Asked Bet as they were running for the stairwell above the trauma care center. I think she tried to hit her from the parking lot. Could have been a car bomb, said Smith. My God, what is going on? Cried Shelley as she held her arm in pain from all the movement. They were dodging bottles and rolls of elastic and packages of towels and swabs with the wheelchair as they negotiated past the few people still left on the floor. Reaching the stairwell, they stopped as they pushed open the door. Shelley, we have one flight of stairs to get down. Which one of you guys can carry her piggyback? I can do it, said Ramirez. She's got a broken arm, guys. Be careful, said Bet. Okay, you put your good arm over my shoulder and lock your legs around my waist. Let your other arm hang down. Bet, if you would support her, I think we can do this, said Ramirez. Hansen, you're on point. I'll take the rear, said Smith. Within seconds, they were on the ground floor, and Hansen pushed open the door with his weapon drawn. The nurse was right behind him, with the 9mm automatic in her right hand pointed down. The lobby was jammed with people, patients, EMT personnel, and police. A fire engine was winding down as it pulled into the parking area. Orphan's Raptor was sitting outside on the grassy area at the edge of the parking lot about 60 yards from the door. He was standing on the rocker panel of the driver's side door, with his door open, looking toward the hospital entrance. The news helicopter flew over the parking lot low and banked hard, making a circle, trying to get a view of what had happened. Let's move out, said Smith. Stay tight on Hansen. You see him? Yes, sir. I have him. 12 o'clock, said Hansen. The team closed in tight around Shelley as they shuffled double time through the lobby and out the door past the fire response team. The smoke was thick, billowing around the corner of the building to the left, and the smell of steam and burnt plastic was strong in their noses and began to sting their eyes. Shelley began to cry out loud now. She was in pain, and the fear had gone past her ability to grit her teeth and hold it in any longer. Suddenly, a white van sped around the corner of the building. While the van was still going at a high rate of speed for the parking area, the side door slid open and a gunman, dressed in black, raised a stubby rifle. He aimed it through the smoked goggles that covered his face. The noise was muffled as the rounds cracked the sound barrier through the noise of the diesel fire truck and the sound of sirens as more pulled in. Hansen got one round off and fell to the pavement hard and stopped moving. The nurse raised her weapon and pulled the trigger as fast as she could, and the rounds could be seen hitting the open van area. It was a moving target, but she managed to put half the rounds in close enough to cause the gunman to retreat slightly and regain his aim. He fired again, and the nurse screamed out and started to hobble as one of the suppressed rounds went through her lower leg, barely missing the bone. Smith raised his pistol and reached around Ramirez, who refused to break stride in heading for the Raptor. He fired slowly and rhythmically, delivering each round into the face of the man in the van that had slowed down to support his line of fire. By the third time he fired, the gunman fell out of the van and into the parking lot. The door slid shut, and the van turned hard to the left, exposing the rear doors to the small group. Ramirez reached his right hand up into his jacket while holding Shelley's good arm with his left and retrieved his pistol. Here, take this, he said, handing the gun to the nurse, who was still next to him and keeping pace, although her left calf was soaked in blood. She threw down the empty 9mm and grabbed his gun, thumbed off the safety, and brought her left hand under the gun handle to steady her aim. The rear door opened up, and two men appeared on their knees with weapons raised. Smith and the nurse began firing into the two men in the back of the van, and suddenly the entire van lurched to the left. Orphan's truck had backed into the van at 30 miles an hour, slamming both men to the side. The nurse poured the remaining rounds from Ramirez's handgun directly into the two men, not more than 50 feet away. Ramirez reached the black truck, and Orphan threw open the back door and helped load Shelley onto the black leather seat. Bet ran around the other side and climbed in next to Shelley. Smith took the front seat, and Orphan belted himself in the driver's seat. You guys go on, said Ramirez. She needs medical, and I have to check on Hansen. I don't know where I'm going, said Orphan. 26 in Wilshire, said Ramirez. Look for the white mansion in the palm trees. You can't miss it. Orphan pushed the start button, and all four tires spun across the grassy area and smoked slightly as the Raptor shot out of the parking area and toward the entrance. Mike, I'm scared, said Bet, leaning over the seat to speak to him. It's okay, Bet. This baby is bulletproof, said Orphan. Yeah, well, look at the side of the hospital. The whole outside wall is gone, she whined. This sure as hell isn't bomb-proof. What are they going to do next, Mike? Shoot missiles at us from the sky? Smith took out Bet's phone and thumbed the screen. Smith here. I need some friendly air cover, he said to the phone. What is the situation? Asked Jones. Disaster. They bombed the hospital from the parking lot and damaged the outer rooms. A van load attacked with suppressed rifles and took out Agent Hansen and injured the nurse. What is the activity status? Asked Jones. Terminated 3. The driver is at large, said Smith. Hold, said Jones. The line went quiet, and Smith held the phone tightly against his ear, waiting. Within a minute, Jones continued. Change of plans. Bayazed penthouse. The garage is secured. Got that? Roger that, said Smith as he pressed the screen to end the call. Your place, Orphan. Now you're talking, said Orphan, stomping the truck into action past the traffic jammed around the hospital entrance. Take me home, baby, he said to the truck as he wrapped his thumbs around the wheel and held tightly.